Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and I'm joined today by Mr. Terence Corrigan. Terence, how are you, sir?
I'm good, and yourself?
I'm pretty good, pretty good. All things considered, I'm suffering terribly from allergies, but that's not really neither here nor there. And Ms. Sarah Gunn. Sarah, how are you?
Hi, Nick. Good, thanks.
Very good. So let us get stuck into the news of the day, and we can't seem to stop talking about the Israel-Palestine conflict, not necessarily the conflict itself, but the sort of weird cultural aftershocks of it. So yesterday we talked a little bit about that story involving the Associated Press and their conduct in reporting on the conflict. But there's been an interesting little, I don't know what to call it, debate, call for action, something like that in South Africa. And this is described on the Times Live website, which wrote an article talking about this event as "Cancel Him, Principals Slated for Asking Pupils Not to Discuss Mideast Crisis." So once again, we have an attempt to cancel someone for saying something. In this case, it was the executive headmaster of Red Hill, a one of the top private schools in Johannesburg, a man called Joseph Gerasi. He wrote to the parents of Red Hill on Friday and said, "At the outset, let me say I do not believe that this issue," referring to Palestine and Israel, "should not be discussed and debated. However, given the emotions currently surrounding this crisis and the age of our children, I do not believe there is anything to be gained from having them argue and debate with each other." He continues, "At such a sensitive time, emotions tend to run high and assumptions tend to be made about people based on their religion and ethnic backgrounds. He urged families to encourage their children not to discuss this issue at school and to desist from canceling any other students on social media." It says something about the times we live in that students are trying to cancel each other on social media. But anyway, this, of course, has provoked some outrage. The leader of the Al-Jamaha party, which is one of the single-seat opposition parties in parliament, Hanif Hendricks, has called for the immediate suspension of this principle and has written in questions to the Minister for Basic Education, Angie Motsweka, demanding that action be taken against the headmaster of this private school. He went on to tell Eusebius Mackayser that this was a contravention of the Constitution and an attack on freedom of speech. That's what he said to Angie Pacheco. Eusebius Mackayser tweeted that he shouldn't even run a creche. How on earth is this the best pedagogical response to decisive conflict to ban your students from talking about it? Use it as a learning moment to role model as a staff how to engage effectively. Also, the move has been criticized by a former debating coach at the school who wrote that he was shocked to learn that the school is discouraging any discussion of the Israel-Palestine conflict. So, Sarah, let me start with you. What do you make of this? What do you think of the principal's call here? And what do you think of the response from broader society?
I think the principal is probably fairly desperate because he knows that any discussion on this issue will probably land up in more than in tears. It'll be emotive. So a whole lot of aspects will not be factual or accurate, or none of that is going to matter. It's a private school, so the kids that go there will probably, a fair number will be Muslim kids and a fair number will be Jewish kids. And in reality, rights aside, in terms of debating, that's a red herring in the sense that the man is, I suspect, clearly trying to prevent a conflagration of hatred and accusation happening in a place where kids don't have necessarily all the knowledge. They do have a lot of emotion. They're teenagers. It's not a situation I would like to deal with. And I think I will probably support him on this, even though I would normally wish for kids to debate anything possible. But I suspect this is not going to happen in a formal way. They are not going to be literal formally constituted, managed and curated debates. And I suspect it is really just to try and prevent something very, very ugly. And it would be very, very difficult to manage. It's too fraught an issue for one not to have a lot of sympathy. And he's a very, very well-known and experienced headmaster. He has a lot of years in private schools behind him. So, and I suspect it's being done because already there are problems as a result of it. And I have very little doubt that social media and cancelling people and defriending them and has already arisen. So he's really trying to just put a practical brake on things so that it doesn't get out of hand.
Right. And that seems to be the clear piece of the context that's missing, I think, from a lot of this. A lot of the reporting in the media here is what preceded this. And it's clear that something did precede it. The headmaster also said in his letter to parents, quote, however strongly you as a family feel about the conflict and who may be right or wrong, this does not give anyone the right to bully, be unkind, or discriminate against anyone else. So it's clear that there has been already some nastiness between students that has resulted in this. Terence?
Can I just add the objection is being the single MP from Al-Jamaa is part of the party platform is the promotion of the establishment of Sharia law. So he's certainly coming from a certain perspective. And frankly, anything Eusebius says, I'd probably say the opposite just for the sake of it.
I know the feeling. He can occasionally be right, but those times are very far between. Mr. Corrigan, sir, how do you feel about this issue? What are your thoughts?
Look, I take a somewhat different view. I hear everything that Sora says, and I think it's, I'm glad I'm not sitting in his office. I imagine this probably is a really dreadful situation, and it's made all the more dreadful since there's nothing that you can do about it in South Africa. These are people for whom this is sort of a pristine moral fairy tale happening in a far flung place where all good and all bad is on one side or the other, depending on which side you're sitting. And I imagine that he probably has had to deal with some fallout. On the other hand, I do think that Mr. Mackay is it Dr. Mackay? No, he didn't finish his PhD.
No, he didn't finish.
Mr. Mackay is correct there. I think debating and being exposed to things is an inherently better way to approach this. Of course, that's what Eusebius Mackay does. He does his podcasts, radio shows, and columns or whatever. So he's coming from so he doesn't have to deal with that sort of fallout. Long after the last rocket or bomb has been fired, there are likely to be hurt feelings and recriminations and whatever. My view on this, though, is that let's say my special take on it, looking at some of the commentary, I have to wonder whether some of the people casting aspersions on the principal's actions are perhaps not motivated by a pristine belief in freedom of speech, but in the idea that this is an opportunity to push one narrative or the other. Now, you mentioned the former debating coach in his contribution in News 24, and you make some very good points that I could identify with. But then he starts to go into, well, there's this consensus that Israel is to blame, and he notes at the bottom that he's involved with BDS. That's in fact his biographical description as opposed to anything he's writing within the body of the text itself. So one has to ask, is this purely a question of we want free speech, or we want the opportunity to push a particular narrative? I suppose for me, I do draw a certain parallel with that in the school in KwaZulu-Natal where there was the satanic art display. Now, I think there's a few things to note. Both are private institutions. Both would have their own let's say, internal set of rules or morality or standards. But both then will be viewed from the outside in terms of what they are, in terms of how those values are measuring up to, let's say, what the broader society expects. Now, when you it was Richards Bay in that particular case, you had a minister of religion whose children had been educated there, going and objecting to this display and saying, well, you know, this has to be, you know, driven out, and there has to be some sort of action to make the school change its mind. You know, here we've got, well, deplatform this guy for not allowing a particular or for discouraging. He doesn't necessarily ban it. Discourage a conversation about a particularly contentious issue. You know, on principle, I would stand against what the in broad principle, I'd stand against both what the pastor was advocating and what the principal is doing. But I do think that one has to also take into cognizance that in these private spaces, there needs to be some latitude for those who have to deal with the immediate consequences and for the immediate setting and maintenance of standards to be able to intervene and play that role. I think perhaps the question here was the principal's decision the right one? I'm really not so sure. Although something I do like to quote is what an archaeologist once said about the pyramids of Egypt, that they have a strange power over people and that they destroy reason. And I wonder if the Arab Palestinian the Palestinian Israeli issue doesn't have quite the same effect.
Yeah, no, I do sympathize with that view, Terence. It's worth saying that when the headmaster responded to this, he said that he hadn't banned anyone from discussing anything, but he said that it was within his rights to discourage people from talking about things in what he called a negative way. He said that he wanted to create safe spaces for people to constructively communicate, discuss this. He said that anyone who is familiar with Red Hill School can attest to how progressive we are in terms of having courageous conversations.
The problem. Right. If you was in what I call a normal school, like a public government school, and from my own experience of the past, what the way to deal with it is not to ban it, and which he didn't, he's discouraging it, and saying if anyone commits an act of misconduct over this issue of any kind, and he can give some examples, they will be severely punished, severely dealt with in disciplinary hearings, and sent a note to the parents along the same lines, and then held the disciplinary hearings for, you know, that's what you do. That's what you used to do in normal times before you tried to create safe spaces. High school is by its nature not a safe space.
Right. I will also say that based on my own experience, I went to a Joburg private school. My general feeling is that these private schools really don't like to ever discipline their students in any serious way, because those students have parents with lawyers, and so they are very worried about annoying some wealthy kids' parents.
But you know, here is perhaps the sort of fly in the ointment. At what point does that act of misconduct become a school issue and a private issue? Now, if it's your Twitter or your WhatsApp group, is that a school thing or not? I think, you know, this is maybe where next point comes in. Well, I'll get my dad's lawyer on this. You know, I cancelled so and so because he believes the wrong thing. I think that sort of ends up being something of a dog's breakfast.
No, absolutely. It's just that, yeah, disciplining naughty teenagers can be very gratifying.
Particularly when so much of their bullying goes on off of school campuses online.
You know, here's something that that I might put forward as a potential solution. When I was in standard five, grade seven, the school that I belong to rolled out this Friday afternoon program of extracurricular. One of the groups you could join was current affairs, which I did with the school principal, and this was kind of this little nirvana where you could talk politics. In fact, we used to have these mock debates where people would, you know, I identified with a PFP, and you know, we used to argue our points with one another. I wonder whether, you know, you can't get some pugilistic teacher of 30 years experience to like get all the politicos into a room together and say, right, Zionists and Palestinians on either side, make up your arguments and I'll adjudicate.
Yeah, you see, I like that idea, but what's going to happen is someone's going to film the whole thing, cut the thing up into misleading segments, and then post it on Twitter. So that they can get outside activists to come and bully people at the school.
Protest.
You know, I would just like to throw something else in. I think it was about 2-3 years ago, there was some issue with, I think it was also a school in KwaZulu-Natal, where a group of BDS activists actually got kids to come out and do some sort of assembly where they pledged their support to Palestine. I'm not sure where that happened, but I know it did. You know, that to me is far worse than what the and as far as I recall, this was a state school. That sort of thing, I think, is far more blameworthy than what this hapless principal is doing. You know, obviously, if it's a private school with a particular orientation, you know, the Zadville Muslim Academy or Victory Park King David or whatever, you know, you can you can push your own line according to taste, but not in a state school.
So, in this case, I think so. Like I said, that, you know, we don't really know what prompted this precisely, but the headmaster did say that he was heartbroken to hear that some of our students were scared of coming to school because of their religion or association with religion. Many were too young to fully understand the history behind this devastating crisis. So, yeah, no, I do sympathize a lot with this decision, and I think it is a difficult issue when you are in a position of management like that to make a call on this. And like you said, Terence, you know, this is a debate where there's very little debate. And a lot of either you want to exterminate us or you have blood on your hands. And there's very little, you can't really have a conversation with those are the two starting positions.
A lot of heat and no light.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, interesting stuff. I hope also that the government does not get involved, because there's also the potential here for an infringement of private schooling, which the government is very eager to get in to do.
Absolutely.
So hopefully the minister stays far away from this issue. Anyway, let us turn now to matters economic. And we have, of course, South Africa's had this ongoing debate about fracking, that is hydraulic fracturing, to get a hold of basically natural gas, and helium, that is under the Karoo. And the Minister of Mineral Resources and Energy, Gwede Mantashe, has said that the government has begun drilling a 3,500-meter stratigraphic hole in the Karoo in September of last year, and that they had recovered samples of various gases, and they believed that they had found gas under the Karoo. Reinergen, which is a energy company, had also been drilling natural gas wells in the Free State and the Northern Cape. And in March, they said that they had, quote, a significant gas strike in the Karoo. So there's now a lot of discussion. There's also, I think it was 2 years ago, that the energy company Total discovered offshore, off of South Africa's southern coast, I think it was, or western coast, I can't remember, that they had found a significant amount of natural gas. And natural gas is very much, I guess, the hot fossil fuel at the moment. It's generally considered to be less CO2 emitting than coal or oil. So it's generally at least slightly more popular in kind of environmental circles. And there's a lot of scope potentially for economic gain from this. So I guess I'm going to start with you, Terrence. What do you think are the potential upsides here? What are the potential downsides? People have raised concerns about environmental impact in the Karoo. What are your feelings?
Well, the government itself has said that fracking could be a game changer for the economy, although, you know, government says that about a lot of things, and then it changes the game itself. I must confess to having some concerns about the environmental issues, particularly with respect to groundwater. Given South Africa's the water stresses that we have. That being said, you know, if that is properly managed, and I'm not a geologist or a hydrologist, but you know, I believe that I understand that can be dealt with. The question, though, I think ultimately is going to be: will anyone want to come? Will it be worth their while if they have the South African state staring over their shoulder, with particularly with legislation that seems to be in the pipeline about demanding free carried interests on these sort of things, with the difficulties of doing business, with BEE requirements. You know, we could well find ourselves sitting on a significant a stockpile that is just not economic to go after. I also just would like to point to chip in here that I do hope that this is not the new Hazel Nile.
Right. I mean, you know, good governance does need to accompany something like this, because you can find all the oil, gas, gold, everything in the world, and firstly, a company may not want to extract it, and secondly, sometimes even if companies do want to extract it, it can be a little bit of a mixed blessing, as Nigeria and Equatorial Guinea have found out to their great dismay, is that when the government can survive almost entirely off of natural gas revenues, it its desire to treat its citizens with any sort of care evaporates rather quickly.
Look, you know, this is I think is a macro issue for our future and for our political economy. The deindustrialization of the country, the shrinkage of state capacity, also all could all start pointing in that direction, where you end up with a very predatory governing or political class that is in bed with what remains of the economic power, and what there is for them essentially is to sort of pull the pull the extractives out and share the benefits. You know, we should always remind ourselves that the challenges, to put it mildly, of our state and the failure to maintain the conditions for a modern successful developing economy. You know, we're not even talking, you know, developed world status, but you know, a nice going forward, has very, very significant impacts on, you know, whether the type of political system that will gel around the country.
Sara, your thoughts on this? You think it's a blessing, a curse, or something in between?
Look, I really can't add to anything that Terrence said. I think he's really covered the range plus and minus. Of course, perhaps let me add in the obvious is we know what's happened with favours done as a result of the energy ships or whatever they're called. I think if anything like this were on the horizon, unless by the time something happens, the ANC is not in power and we actually have something that resembles a decent government, it will be another opportunity to do. The amounts involved one way or the other are big. And also, as we've seen from the previous fracking sort of fight, which is probably only marginally less heated than the Arab-Israeli conflict, you know, you're going to have to take on, the government's going to have to take on the eco fraternity, and that is going to be no mean thing. But I think between the proclivity for corruption and the fact that the government is going to make it, in terms of its current and future policies, so difficult for any proper company to actually realize a project like this, I think it's potentially positive. I think in reality, we're not likely to see it.
Yeah, no, for all of the concerns and problems that we see here, it would be nice to have something in the east, in the Northern Cape. I mean, it is a fairly bleak province. There ain't much there. The Karoo can't carry much except some sheep, and even then, not that many of them. So having, industries and people to support those industries in the Northern Cape would, I think, uplift that part of the world, which is rather difficult place, I think, to get by. And so we can hope that there will be some successes there, I think. Terence?
Yep, no, absolutely. Look, potentially a game changer, potentially significant, has to be managed well, has to be managed at all.
Exactly. Right. And so let us travel to that wonderful land overseas, Hollywood, or sort of the I don't know, the glitterati part of America. So those of you who followed the news last year, I think it was, or perhaps it was the year before, will have heard of a former actress, or I think she might still be a current actress, Gwyneth Paltrow, has been selling various kinds of health and beauty products and things to make your home interesting and pretty and have good feng shui or whatever. And infamously, she released a product which was a scented candle, which was selling for $75, called "This Smells Like My Vagina." Now, this of course caused a bit of a stir. Everyone had a good laugh, and someone decided to buy the candle, and he said that he put it by his bedside, burned it for 3 hours, and then it, quote, exploded and became engulfed in high flames. He is now attempting to sue Gwyneth Paltrow's company for, I think it's somewhere around $5 million, after he said that the blaze left a, quote, black burn ring on his bedside table and the candle jar was charred and black. Despite the fact that there were no injuries, he thinks that he should receive damages because he says that the product was dangerous. The company has responded that the website has a warning saying that you mustn't burn this candle for more than 2 hours. And they went on to say, quote, "We're confident this claim is frivolous and an attempt to secure an outsized payoff from a press-heavy product. We stand behind the brands that we carry and the safety of the products as well." So, Gwyneth Paltrow is certainly making our lives more entertaining. Terence, your thoughts?
Well, all I can say is that when this guy goes down, I take it he goes down in flames. Actually, I looked this particular product up, and I just think that our readers would like to know what they get for $75, all four interest-free payments of $18.75. So you got to want this thing, really. It's 10.5 ounces, which is it's a substantial one. With a funny, gorgeous, sexy, and beautifully unexpected scent, this candle is made from geranium, citrusy bergamot, cedar absolutes juxtaposed with damask rose and aberrant seed, put us in a mind of fantasy, seduction, and sophisticated warmth. Now, I'm going to take a flyer here, and I don't think that that's what Gwyneth Paltrow's bits smell like. The product makes the claim, and who am I? Because I've never seen the claim or the item after which it's named. But yes, seriously, you want 5 million because a scented candle blows up. I do think actually I seem to remember actually there was a previous instance where the same candle blew up. So I don't know, maybe those damask tamarinds or whatever that they put in there, are highly flammable. But it's also available through a site called Goop,
That's
Goop.
business.
I'm just wondering, who sells sophisticated female scented candles called and names it Goop, right? I wonder whether this isn't just like one of those markers that future historians will look back on and say, this is kind of where a once great civilization lost its mind.
Yeah, I Sarah,
what's wrong
on
with the
that
cinema
point,
example?
is this the beginning of the end? Is this a sign that we've reached peak
Oh, I think
decadence?
it's an uprising. I think it's the people for the liberation of the people against celebrities who make faux, pretentious products and make lots of money out of it with a silly name. I'm all behind the man and anyone who joins him.
got the guy with the big black ring on his table now.
He's at the table. Oh gosh, I thought.
No, I mean, you know, you quite, you know, in a way, you look, you kind of wish that you were making this stuff up. I mean, this is something I could imagine in an episode of Married with Children at one stage.
Yeah, no, I when I see a story like this in the news, I can't but think to myself, I think we might be doomed. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. So thank you very much for watching. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you tomorrow. Please, if you want to support the IRR or the Daily Friend, SMS your name to 32823, and we'll call you back to sign you up as a friend of the Institute. Have a great day, everyone, and we'll see you around.